Thank you. Good afternoon and good morning to those of you on the West, and welcome to the Talking Freight Seminar. Today's topic is non-traditional freight data sources. Please be advised that today's seminar is being recorded. Before I go any further, I do want to remind all of you that if you're calling into the teleconference, the default is that the audio is being broadcast over your computer. So please just mute your computer speakers, or else you're going to be hearing the audio over your computer and your phone. Today we'll have three presenters: Crystal Jones of the Federal Highway Administration Office of Freight Management and Operations, Dale Tabbitt of the Washington State Department of Transportation, and Alon Bassock of the Puget Sound Regional Council. Crystal Jones joined Federal Highway's Office of Freight Management and Operations in October 2003. Prior to joining FHWA, Crystal worked for the Department of Army for 11 years, where she held several positions in transportation and logistics, including an assignment with the Office of the Deputy Chief of Staff for Logistics at the Pentagon. Her primary area of expertise is with freight technology and operations. She also has extensive experience in the areas of programming and budgeting and strategic and performance planning. Crystal holds a bachelor's degree in industrial technology and a concentration in computer science from Elizabeth City State University, as well as a master's of science in administration from Central Michigan University. She is the program manager for FHWA's Freight Performance Measures Initiative. Dale Tabbitt is the truck freight program and policy manager for the Washington State Department of Transportation. His areas of focus are on integrating truck freight services within the department, truck parking, truck freight data, research, and policy. He also serves as a division's liaison with the Washington Trucking Association and legislative staff. He has over 30 years of management experience in the transportation sector, working in operations, sales, planning, and pricing positions for numerous companies, including U.S. Express, Federal Express, Roadway, Rollins Dedicated Services, and Pacific Intermountain Express. He has also served on the board of directors for the California and Utah Trucking Association. He is also the chair of the Guidebook for Sharing Freight Transportation Data, NCFRP, panel. Alon Bassock works for the Puget Sound Regional Council, where he is a freight economics analyst. He is responsible for coordinating region-wide traffic data collection and has extensive experience working with truck-related GPS data. He has taught courses on sustainability transportation for the University of Washington's Department of Urban Planning and received his PhD from the University of Washington in 2009. I'd now like to go over a few logistical details prior to starting the seminar. Today's seminar will last 90 minutes, with 60 minutes allocated for the speakers and the final 30 minutes for audience question and answer. If during the presentations you think of a question, you can type it into the chat area. Please make sure you send your question to everyone and indicate which presenter your question is for. Presenters will be unable to answer your questions during their presentations, but I'll start off the Q&A session with the questions typed into the chat box. Once we get through all the questions that have been typed in, the operator will give you instructions on how to ask a question over the phone. If you think of a question after the seminar, you can send it to the presenters directly, or I encourage you to use the Freight Planning Listserv. The listserv is a great forum for sharing freight information. If you haven't already joined the listserv, the web address at which you can register is provided on your screen. Finally, I'd like to remind you that the session is being recorded. A file containing the audio and the visual portion of the seminar will be posted to the Talking Freight website within the next few weeks. I encourage you to direct others in your office that may have not been able to attend to access the recording. The PowerPoint presentations used today are available for download from the file download box in the lower right corner of your screen. The presentations will also be available online, as well as a recording and a transcript. I'll notify all attendees once they're available. One final note, today's seminar, as well as all Talking Freights, are now eligible for 1.5 certification maintenance credits for AICP members. In order to obtain credit for today's seminar, you must have logged in with your first and last name, or if you're attending with a group of people, please type your name into the chat box. I have included more detailed instructions in the file share box on how to obtain your credits after the seminar. Please also download the evaluation form from the file share box and submit it to me after you've filled it out. In addition, even if you're not applying for AICP credits, if you do want to fill out the evaluation form and send it to me, that would be great. I just noticed it's actually not in the box right now. I will get it uploaded once we get started. So I'll now go ahead and get started. Today's topic, for those of you who just joined us, is non-traditional freight data sources. Our first presenter will be Crystal Jones of the FHWA Office of Freight Management and Operations. And as a reminder, if you have questions during the presentation, please type them into the chat box and they'll be answered at the end of the seminar. So with that, Crystal, I'm going to bring up your presentation and I will turn it over to you.
Okay, great. Well, good afternoon, everyone, and thanks for joining today's session on non-traditional freight data sources. I think at the end of the presentation, you would have found it well worth your while for participating. And I'm going to start out by just going over in a national initiative that we have ongoing here at Federal Highway called the Freight Performance Measurement Initiative. And it's not going to so much focus on the data, but focus on the process and institutional challenges we face getting the initiative started and some of the lessons we've learned with regards to establishing a partnership with the private sector to obtain what we consider a non-traditional freight data source that could have long-lasting values for the transportation community. As Jennifer said, I'm from Federal Highway's Office of Freight Management and Operations, and within our office we have a wide range of activities and mission areas, and primarily the work that we do focuses on understanding the magnitude and geography of freight moving on the national transportation system, developing strategies, analytical tools, institutional arrangements, and professional capacity for addressing freight movement, understanding and promoting the economic benefits of transportation and freight movement, encouraging innovative freight technology and operations. And we also have within our office the size and weight enforcement mission for the Department of Transportation. There's been several reauthorization proposals and positions put forth by several agencies such as AASHTO. The department had a reform strategy that they put forth during the last administration. And while they differ in some aspects, there are some common themes that have come forth in most of the reauthorization proposals with regard to freight. And listed here are some of those key themes: defining the federal role in goods and freight movement, incorporating freight performance and accountability, which is really the focus of the presentation I'll be giving today, is getting toward better data for performance measurement and accountability, promoting better management of existing assets, using operations and technology strategies, for instance, using multiple funding sources for transportation projects and programs, and linking policy and funding to the environment and energy sectors. So what kind of freight data do we typically need as transportation decision makers? Well, obviously there's a myriad of transportation function areas with regard to freight and highway transportation and infrastructure side, for instance. We need data to know what are the key corridors and gateways we should be making investment in to prepare for the future. So that requires forecasting and data to enable forecasting to not only understand transportation and freight movement today, but to be able to think about investments in a more longer-term strategy. How does freight movement affect congestion, and how does congestion affect freight movement? So understanding how the system is performing and operating with regard to freight movement. And from a policy and regulation side, as I mentioned, we have competing priorities. So what are the best investments that we should make, and how should we allocate our scarce funding among different transportation goal areas and programs? So what's the freight data challenge? I'm sure most of us on the teleconference and webinar today have been, if we work in the freight area, challenged with coming up with the right types of data, having harmonization among definitions. There may be a data source that has commodity, but the commodity might not be to the level that's needed for a particular modeling effort. So the challenge of harmonized definition of freight data is one of the many challenges we face. And also in freight transportation, we often use available data as a proxy for the data that we really need. As an example, we use the flow of trade as a proxy for geographical flows. We use weight ratios. We use export ratios to come up with values for weight ratios, et cetera. And then there's also the lack of authoritative data sources and management agencies for data sources, meaning there is no national freight data source that we could point to say this is the authoritative data source that we should be using to make freight transportation decisions. So the initiative that we started in 2003 called the Freight Performance Measurement Initiative, though it really, as I'll describe later, is a contractual partnership, we consider it to be a public-private partnership in that most of the data and information we need on freight movement resides in the private sector. So when you talk about getting towards the data that's closest to the most realistic and most accurate data, it becomes necessary to get the source data as close as possible from where the data originated. So this leads us to think that maybe public-private data partnerships offer an opportunity to get better freight data. So what are the challenges? Well, in the effort we set up, I mean, there's going to be often challenges associated with legal, confidentiality, proprietary nature of the data. And then even if you get towards, if you get at the point where you negotiate a contract or a data sharing agreement, there's going to be difficulties coming up with the right terms of use, and then you're going to have to match databases. So the concept of sharing private data with the public sector seems like a good idea, but it does not come without challenges. And what I'll do in the next few slides is discuss some of the challenges and opportunities that we discovered in our freight performance measurement initiative. So a lot of the work in the Freight Performance Measurement Initiative started out for Federal Highway because we have a strategic goal of system performance, and what that goal says is that we want to be able to provide safe, reliable, effective, sustainable mobility for all users. And from a freight perspective, the users, the freight users of the system, we wanted to have measures and data that accurately depicts how efficiently and effectively freight is moving on the highway system. So that was our initial goal, or our initial purpose for pursuing this new freight data that we have now acquired through a public-private data partnership. What was the compelling reason for the private industry to participate? It was purely because they felt, we feel like the private sector wanted to share this data because they share a common interest that we have in improving operations, increasing capacity, and garnering support for freight funding that could support projects of national and regional significance, corridors and border infrastructure programs. So a lot of their reasoning for participating in this initiative was because they believe that we're going to use the data to make better transportation decisions. So what is this Freight Performance Measurement Initiative? Well, it started in 2003, and it's really a contractual relationship between the Federal Highway Administration and the American Transportation Research Institute. And the American Transportation Research Institute, in turn, has non-disclosure agreements with vendors of GPS and satellite data. And from that data, we derive measures of travel time, speed, and reliability for the highway system. So on a typical month, we have about 500,000 trucks that are equipped with GPS and satellite technology nationwide. And as I mentioned, what we essentially do is we use that data on location and and date timestamp to derive measures of speed and travel time reliability for 25 significant interstate highways, 25 interstates with significant freight movement. In addition to doing the work that we've done at the national level, we've also partnered with several universities to figure out how you could better apply and use this data at the state and levels below the national level. We had 5 case studies with universities throughout the U.S., Portland State, the University of Minnesota, Texas Transportation Institute, 2 different work groups within the Texas Transportation Institute, and the University of Wisconsin. And this purpose was to see how you could use this data in other freight transportation areas. What Portland State did is they used the data to look at recurring and non-recurring congestion and the impact that it had on commercial vehicles traveling in around the Portland metro area. So the point of our research at this point is that we wanted to go beyond using the data at the national levels to derive the measure of speed and travel time reliability that I showed in the map and figure out how states and MPOs could potentially use this data to support their freight business areas. The University of Minnesota work with the Minnesota Department of Transportation to use the GPS data to derive measures of travel time and travel time reliability for a city pair between Chicago and the Minneapolis-St. Paul area. Texas Transportation Institute looked at the same data, and the point of showing you this is to say that the initiative started out as a national initiative to derive national measures, but through this research with the universities, we've shown that it has applicability down below the national level. And one of the other applications that we've also explored using this data with is for measuring border crossing performance. Texas Transportation Institute looked at the same GPS data that we use to derive measures of travel time and travel time reliability on the interstate system to see how they could derive measures of border crossing time and performance for border crossings in the Texas area, specifically El Paso and Laredo. And essentially what they did is, this is a picture and I'm looking at it on my screen, it doesn't look like it's coming through very clear, but they overlaid 2 months of GPS data on a busy crossing in the Laredo World Trade Area. And essentially what their research showed is that you could use the same type data to understand the border crossing process, not only from a total crossing time perspective, but also segments within a border crossing. For instance, how long it takes to go from the Mexican export lot to customs primary. And one of the most interesting uses of this data has been by the University of Wisconsin, in which they're looking at performance measures having to do with resiliency and network resiliency. And essentially what they used is they used the travel time data, the average speed data, and the number of events observed both before a severe weather incident and two severe weather incidents to come up with measures of robustness, which describe the ability of a highway network to withstand disasters without significant performance loss, and measures of rapidity, which is the ability to restore to original capacity after an incident. So now, what are the lessons that we've learned through this data? Well, some of the key lessons that we learned regard getting started, that if you want to pursue this path of getting access to private sector data by the public sector for use for freight planning or freight operations, the first thing you should do when you get started is be knowledgeable of the regulations, both on the public side and the private side, that can restrict or facilitate access to the data. For instance, when we started our freight performance initiative, one of the main things we had to deal with was how do you ensure that the data is anonymous and doesn't disclose any proprietary information of a particular trucking company. Another thing is there's going to be time and patience required to cultivate relationships in the right organizations. When we started out with a select few trucking companies, and we did it only for a few interstate highways, and through the positive feedback from the trucking companies that participated, we were able to convince the vendors of the technology to work out the right legal agreements to give us access, not on a per company basis, but basically to an entire fleet. So the data arrangements that we have to gain access to the GPS data, which is essentially used to calculate speed and travel time reliability, now instead of having individual arrangements with individual trucking companies, we have arrangements with large technology vendors that provide access to the entire fleets for the fleets that subscribe to their particular product. And probably one of the big lessons that we had to learn in getting started was that this type of data produces mass amounts of data, terabytes and terabytes of data. So we had to carefully think through how we're going to handle and collect and store and process the data, and making sure that we collect what we need as opposed to going and ask for the world and not having the ability to collect, process, or analyze the data. And there are reasons why the private sector would say no, and for us, I'll talk about some of the top concerns the trucking companies and participants had in the beginning of our initiative. But the primary things that we hear in terms of why they might not want to share their freight data is they're afraid of being burned by bad publicity or regulation. There's this thought process that preparing the data would put a burden on staff that are already overworked and they don't have additional staff hours to enable them to share data and manage the data sharing process. They're worried about improper use and mishandling of the data. For instance, if you take the GPS data, can the data be used to, you know, set up speed traps, for instance, even though that's probably a far-fetched one, but those are the types of concerns that we had to deal with and assure them that these issues could be addressed in a way that didn't harm their business. And the concern that the source data would be modified by the government to tell a story that wasn't necessarily so. The fact that there is a handling and processing that takes the raw data and uses it to derive secondary measures, there was concern about does modifying the data really tell the right story? So those were the type of issues we had to address in terms of getting them to want to participate. And some of the things that we used to get them to say yes was the quid pro quo, meaning, you know, they get something in return for allowing us to use the data. And as I started out my message, that our first story to them was, we're going to use this data to hopefully come up with better freight data that allows us to make better investment decisions. So that was our original going in process. And for this particular project, there is financial reimbursement. So a lot of times the quid quo pro could just be financial reimbursement. And there is financial reimbursement, but considering the amount of data and the benefits we get out of the data, we think that the price we pay is not necessary, is the benefits far outweigh the cons that come with the price that we pay for access to the data. And to have examples ready of how it could benefit them, for instance, I had in the slide previously that showed that, you know, there are specific freight programs that could come out of freight funding and dedicated freight programs that could come out of having access to this type of data. And if there's not a good story to tell on how it could benefit them, there should probably be a good story on how they couldn't be harmed, meaning, you know, there's nothing proprietary about it, it's anonymous. So if you don't have a good storyline behind how it could benefit them as an industry, at least have a good story behind how it won't harm them. And to counter the saying no about processing the data could cause a burden for our program, a lot of the processing comes after we receive the raw data. It's just the assurances are put in place to say there's an agreed upon process of what those processes would be, so they have assurance that it will be anonymous and there won't be any proprietary information. So we've taken a lot of the burden on us for processing the data and minimized the impact on them in terms of how they have to package the data to provide us access to it. And then the last one, the concept of peer pressure. I mean, other countries, and it's a state partnership you're trying to arrange, other states have done it. There's always putting forth that notion that other people are doing and showing examples of how it has been successful. For our initiative, the main concerns, you know, and some of the why they should say yes is how we went about addressing this, but the main concerns that the trucking industry specifically had with regard to giving us access to the GPS data was civil litigation or trial lawyers, meaning using the data to do subpoenas or do some discovery of trying to reenact an accident or that type of thing. And again, I've mentioned it several times before, but the competitive and proprietary nature of some of the data, making sure that you don't use the data to pinpoint a particular trucking company moving out of a particular city and giving data on their market share to their competitors. And the whole idea of government access, a lot of that we've handled. We don't, as Federal Highway, take possession of any of the data. It's managed by ATRI as a third party. So a lot of the access issues we've managed by having a third party manage the data, and we get secondary data products versus access to the raw data. And then I think I will close by saying, you know, one of the things I pointed out was sort of having examples of success stories and things that have worked in the past. Federal Highway is completing a research project on a freight compendium, which is a compendium of examples of public-private data partnership or instances where the private sector has shared data with the public sector. And that research initiative is wrapping up now in the compendium. This should be available. It's going to be on our website, and it'll give you examples of who the partners were, what the arrangements were, what the processes were to get into the arrangements, some of the lessons learned, etc. So that compendium will be available probably in the next month or so on our website. And lastly, I'll put this link up, and I don't know, I thought I was going to be able to do a short demo of a tool that we've developed called the FPM Web, Freight Performance Measurement Web. And the map I showed at the very beginning, basically what this web link will give you is it'll link to access to a web tool that we've developed based on the travel time data that we have for the 25 interstates that were shown in the map early on in the presentation. So Jennifer will make this web link available in a web pod, in a chat pod before the end of the presentation, and we invite you to log on to the website and explore the data and see how it might be useful to you or your organization. And this slide was just sort of my vision of what the end state of quality freight data was, but I'll just leave it up, and I'm sure most of you will agree, but I won't read it to you. So anyhow, I think that is it for me.
Okay. Well, thank you, Crystal. And I did put that link in the chat pod for anybody who's interested. I'm now going to turn it over to Dale Tabbitt of the Washington State Department of Transportation, and we'll address the questions for Crystal at the end of all three presentations. So, Dale, I'll turn it over to you now.
Okay, thank you. Good morning from beautiful but rainy Seattle. I am Dale Tabbitt. I am the Truck Freight Program Policy Manager for the Washington State DOT. On my title slide there, you'll also see the name of Ed McCormick. Ed is my partner in this venture at the University of Washington TransNow Regional Center. He is our technical expert. Unfortunately, or fortunately for him, he's on vacation this week. But if you have technical questions that I can't answer, we'll certainly send them over to Ed for an answer. The Truck Freight Performance Measure Research Project was a joint partnership between TransNow, WashDOT, and a lot of cooperation from the Washington Trucking Association. They were very essential in getting our funding in order to move forward with this project. Just some quick background here. In 2007, the Washington State Legislature appropriated money for the project. We were able to secure some additional federal fundings via the Washington TransNow Center and also some in-kind money from them. It was put together in a bill in the budget, and it directed us to track truck movements in the central Puget Sound area and actually see if we could take that data and develop it into a GIS map type format. And so the legislature appropriated $324,000 of the $428,000, or reappropriated $324,000 of the $428,000. And the reason for that is because the original program was supposed to end at the end of I believe 2009, but or in July of 2009, but because of some ability to get GPS data, we had to change the direction we were going in. Originally, the thought process was we could get it directly from trucking companies in the area, and for some of the reasons that Crystal talked about early, what we wound up doing is going to GPS third-party providers and buying data directly from them. So our providers that we've been buying data from or getting data from are Trimble, which is at now Turnpike, which is now owned by Zeta. Attree has supplied us data, as well as some Qualcomm data that we've received from a fleet we outfitted with Qualcomm instrumentation. One of the reasons we wanted to put this program together was to look at how does this benefit the state of Washington. And there were three top reasons on why we needed to do this program. Number one is future federal freight funding request. All the bills that we're seeing or hearing about on reauthorization talks about a freight component, and within that component is a request for performance measurement data. Number two is to increase the department's accountability to our citizens, actually to our customers as we look at them. It gives us the ability to look at a project before, during, and after the project and be able to say, yes, it's doing what we told you it was going to do. And then also it gives us the ability to look at where we have existing bottlenecks or chokes or speed slowdowns, so that we will put the amount of money that we have, which is now limited, into the biggest bang for the buck. So on number one, future federal freight funding request, as we said, or as I said, everything we're hearing on reauthorization is on performance measurements. So we have looked at three issues there: travel time, reliability, and access. And the project has shown that we can actually track truck travel times and look at the reliability of the network with the onboard GPS. This map here gives us a zonal idea, or gives you a zonal look at the number of trips in and between zones. The reason we chose zones is also for another reason that Crystal gave, is so that we aren't drilling down to a location site. Once again, carriers get very nervous if that data is being put out in the public realm that that their competition can see, or that could possibly be used to punish them or change route movements. Increased public accountability to our citizens, to our customers. We decided to do a concept look to see to prove the concept of this. Had a construction project last year in May on the I-90 floating bridge, which is shown on the map at the side over Lake Washington. We were replacing the expansion joints on the center roadway in the May time period, so we had the idea, let's take a look at that and track trucks on that. And so what we've seen, what we were able to do, is actually look at differences during construction, before construction, and after construction, and see that there were changes in the traffic. We had the ability to look at both directions, so we looked at the eastbound and the westbound side. Now, we haven't analyzed what this means. It was just a proof of concept that we could actually look at changes in truck speed based upon a construction project. One of the other things we were able to do is take that road segment, as you see here on the map. We can actually look at that and look at the spot speeds that exist on that road. And so you can see a slowdown here on 25 miles or less on this curve and then on the bridge. And this was information for a week in January. Now, people will tell you in the Seattle area when we do this presentation, well, we already know there's a slowdown on this particular portion of I-90, which is great. But if you're out using this to get money for a project from the federal government, and you're presenting this to a representative from Illinois, well, they don't know what happens on at the junction of I-90 and I-5, which is this roadway here. So what this shows is we definitely do have a slowdown and a choke point at that particular part of the roadway. So to even go further to take a look at it, we looked at a year's worth of data. We're able to see that there's a variance in the average truck speed westbound and a larger a variance in the travel eastbound, and as to what this happens. Now, this piece of road, as you can see, does have a very distinct curve in it, which causes trucks to slow down when they go through that. But the other thing is, as they come down at this point here, there's a set of express lane on ramps that, if they're open, does cause a slowdown in traffic going into the Mount Baker Tunnel, which is at this point here. So that's one of the reasons we're looking at a slower speed there. The average of all vehicle speed comes off of our loops that are in the roadway. In another study that the university did, that Ed McCormick did at the university, with GPS data a few years back, they did notice that when the system was showing free flow, average truck speed was 10 to 15 miles less off of the GPS units than free flow. So they weren't sure where that came from, so they actually sent out students with their cars to follow the probed vehicles and found out that, yes, they were actually traveling slower than the surrounding traffic. And the reasons for that are hills, congestion on the ramps. Trucks are over in the right-hand lane, so they are slowing down for traffic entering or leaving the roadway, and that does cause a variance in their speed. This is just another presentation we can do on this. We can break it down on a pie graph. It gives a better visual, and once again, you can see up at the bottleneck area that the slower speeds are more dominant than they are on the straighter areas of the system. One of the things we were requested to look at is we can look at free flow, we can look at interstates, can we actually start looking at ramps? And this is just another proof of concept that we had the ability to go out there using this GPS data and plotting the movements of trucks on the ramps and hopefully be able to get their spot speeds so we can look at ramp and interchange performance on the network. So there are benefits and the cost of monitoring truck performance on the statewide network, and the advantages are it actually gives us truck speeds that we really have no other way to obtain. We do not have a system that differentiates a truck from a car on the freeway system. We can actually look at those trucks and provide that data to our to trucking companies and shippers so that they have a better idea during the day where the delays, the stops, the slower speeds are on specific routes, which would help them operationally either hold the truck back or move it out earlier in the day, but to avoid those congestion spots. And the big advantage is that data is out there right now. We are buying it from third parties. I will tell you, in a lot of instances, the third parties didn't even think of this. I mean, this is, if you want to look at it, this is data waste. This is stuff, data that they're storing for their customers. After it's out there, unless the customer comes back and requests it to look at it, it's really not out there. The limitations on this is that you need to be researching this at all times. You need to have the analysis going on. It's not a performance program that you can put out there and automatically let it run. It needs to be managed. And one of the other problems that we've seen is this, it works very well on heavily traveled road segments. You need a lot of GPS data on local roads to analyze their performance. You also need to have reads that are very short in nature in the time between the reads. Our average reads right now are around 15 minutes. Ideally, we would like to see about 2 to 3 minutes. Currently in the central Puget Sound, we're utilizing information from about 2,500 trucks. And while that sounds like a lot spread out over a couple hundred square miles, it gets a little spotty in places. So the more vehicles information you can capture, the much better off you're going to be. Our next steps on this is we did go back to the state legislature in January and made actually this presentation to them, telling them, showing them what we've done, what we're able to do, why we need to continue this, especially to justify federal funding and to support our state freight investment decisions. We gave them three options. One was just to maintain the system, the program in the central Puget Sound, to increase it to statewide coverage of high-volume truck highways, and then also to go to high-volume highways and local truck corridors. The state legislature in the budget that came out this year, our supplemental transportation budget, gave us an additional $122,000 to continue the program through June of 2011, and also changed the language expanding the area, so we're now able to go out and look at the whole state of Washington versus just the central Puget Sound. So by getting this statewide coverage, it will help us develop benchmarks and performance measures on a wider basis. We can look at major cross-state routes, major freight corridors in urban areas outside of Puget Sound, so we can go down to the metropolitan areas of Spokane and Vancouver, Washington. We'll be able to look at some low-level urban segments. It will give us the ability to look at our border crossings, which is very important to the economy of the state of Washington. And then finally, what we're going to do on our GPS data when we talk to the vendors to get this additional data is have them expand it out a 100 miles around the state. So we will actually look, have a buffer zone of 100 miles in Idaho and Oregon, so that we can see those trucks that are originating outside of the state of Washington and where they're coming from. Then finally, on some more of the statewide performance measurements, is we will be able to take this program and tailor it to different organizations and companies. So we'll be able to look at particular segments of it. The more data we can collect over a period of time, the better our measurements and benchmarks are going to be. It will help us support and validate a statewide freight forecasting model. One of the things we're working on at WSDOT is looking at getting funding and developing a commodity flow survey and a map so that we can understand it, where the freight is moving within the state of Washington, and what routes it's taking, and better understand limitations and the benefits of the data, and develop analytical and management tools. And then finally, one of the aspects of this that the university is working on is putting this into a internet framework where organizations can go on and look at data between two zones and look at the truck travel and performance measurements on the routes between those zones at different times of the day, days of the week type information. And there is my contact information and Ed's, so that you can send us any questions. And also, Jennifer mentioned I'm the chair of Panel 31, and that is a panel of the National Cooperative Freight Research Program. And what we are doing is right now we're in the process of getting proposals in to build a guidebook to transportation data management. And it basically goes hand in hand to what Crystal was talking about, is using this as a guidebook on going out and getting data from the private sector and overcoming those obstacles. And thank you for your time.
Well, thank you, Dale. We're now going to move on to our final presentation given by Alon Basak of the Puget Sound Regional Council. So Alon, when you're ready, you can go ahead.
Great. Thank you, Jennifer. So I would like to talk about getting the weeds a little bit more and reiterate some of the things that Crystal and Dale have already spoken about. I'd like to talk about two projects that we've worked on over the last couple of years at the Puget Sound Regional Council, and how excited we are, and I think nationally there's great interest building over GPS data and truck GPS data in particular, because it allows us both to do things that we simply couldn't do before and to do things that we have been able to do a little bit better than we've done before. So I'll talk about two projects. The first one compares vehicle speeds, trucks and cars on freeways. This is work we completed about a year ago through our congestion management process that was supported by a STEP research grant. And Dale alluded already to the speed differences of trucks and how they travel slower on the road, so we examined that in greater detail. So I'll talk about that a little bit. And then a project that we've completed now and where we're going with it on trip generation, being able to use the GPS data and understand better the relationship between how many trucks come out of specific land uses and employment types. And we used grocery stores as a proof of concept in one case study, but this could easily be applied to any other type of commercial or industrial manufacturing activity. And then finally, I just want to discuss where we're going next with this and how exciting the GPS data is for us, and I think for others as well. So as Dale mentioned earlier, we know that trucks travel slower than cars, in particular on our freeways, and there's a variety of reasons for this, but most notably they accelerate more slowly, they take more time to decelerate, it takes them more time to get up to speed on hills, to keep speed as they climb hills, they're in the right-hand lane, or, well, closer to the right-hand side of things on the freeways. So generally they travel slower than cars, and just knowing this isn't quite enough. The question really becomes how much slower and on which facilities, which has wide implications both for our travel demand model, which this work was meant to support, but also for pretty much any other model. Air quality modeling needs truck speed information as an input. And then, of course, all of these models feed actual planning applications, so any analysis that is done with the results of the models that later can be used for investment decisions. So a better understanding of truck performance ultimately leads to the things that Crystal and Dale were already suggesting are important, and being able to say which facilities are suffering, which ones need improvement, perhaps where do we need new facilities, and so on. So in our model, as things stood at the time, on a regional level, we did a fairly good job of estimating how many trucks were on the roadways combined between the freeways and arterials. But at the time, we grossly overestimated how many of them were on the freeways and underestimated how many were on the arterials. And this is largely because there was no differentiation within the modeling framework of the speeds for trucks and cars. So we wanted to understand kind of by how much should you lower the speeds on the freeways and raise them onto arterials, or just lower on the freeways? What is the exact relationship of truck speeds in order to be able to better represent, not on the aggregate level, but now on the facility level, what is going on with trucks? And as Dale was mentioning, there's no better way to come up with spot speeds and to be able to pull trucks specifically out from all other vehicles than to use GPS data. So we were quite excited about being able to try this for the first time. Unfortunately, serendipity didn't quite work in our favor, so the timing was such that we didn't quite get to use the GPS data set that Dale was describing for this effort. But Ed McCormick and Mark Hallenbeck at the University of Washington were kind enough to let us use an earlier data set that they collected. Included about 500,000 points, and if you see it on the map, they look like straight lines. And we're only looking at freeways here. But both for this particular GPS data set and the one Dale described, if you look at a year's worth of data, there's hardly a street anywhere on the road network that doesn't have trucks on it. Trucks go absolutely everywhere. So lots and lots of data and all the ensuing maintenance issues that come with that, as Crystal was describing. The data here is from 8 trucking firms from 25 GPS units that were equipped with them, and we considered 14 different highway routes. And the problem we ran into is, no matter how wonderful this data was, we didn't have a comparably wonderful GPS data set to use for the passenger vehicles over the same time frame. So for this purpose, it didn't quite work out so well that we could use the best data available. And the reason this became problematic, as you see here, is that the most comparable data set we had was slightly different in time frame and included all traffic. And what we ended up with was a result that for the most part said the trucks travel faster than cars, which, well, unfortunately simply isn't true. So we had to do something else. I think that for the most part, GPS data is a wonderful tool and would be an ideal tool, but you have to plan these things far enough in advance in order to be able to collect all the data you need, so not only the truck data, but also the car data in this instance. So while this is the best possible type of data we could have had, we had to step back and say, well, what's second best? So I want to talk just very briefly on what we did to resolve the issue and be able to complete this analysis. So in lieu of the GPS data, we took speed trap data from the state's loop detectors on the highways and separated out the vehicles by length classes. The shorter vehicles we called cars, and anything that was longer in the latter three bins we consider to be trucks. Of course, there's other things in there as well, buses, RVs, and so on, but not sufficiently enough of them to give us concern about wanting to separate them out further. And then we looked at observations that had either just cars or just trucks in these 20-second intervals in order to say, here are truck speeds, here are car speeds. And as it later turns out, and I'll show this in a minute, that becomes quite problematic because we're not looking at any time interval that has both cars and trucks in the same 20-second time interval. Just as a comparison, this is one example at one location of how the GPS data compares to the long vehicle estimation. This is for AM peak, and just within a very short distance of the actual speed trap. So there's many more GPS observations, but these are just the GPS observations immediately adjacent to the speed trap. And across the board, all the speed traps in the region, the speeds were within a reasonable range between the GPS data and the long vehicle, such that we felt comfortable using the analysis. So the GPS data told us what the best case scenario might be, and here it is validating this other procedure. And so then what we came up with is the difference that trucks go somewhere between 10 and 11, depending on the peak period, miles slower than cars, 18% to 21% difference. And this could be applied then to the modeling framework to even out what happens on the freeway assignment versus the arterial assignment. But to further validate this, we wanted to see how things turned out over time. And as you see here, something quite strange happened in that the 2006 traffic volumes for both, or I'm sorry, speeds for both cars and trucks outperform the speeds of the in the year 2000. And while it's always great to sit in your office and with a click of a mouse be able to, you know, fix regional congestion issues, this simply isn't the case. And so we had to do a little analysis to figure out what went wrong with all of this and why we're seeing the discrepancy in over time. So just as an illustration, again, we only considered the observations that had just cars or just trucks. And what happens is that essentially we're looking at the slowest trucks and the fastest cars, and we're missing everything in the middle, but don't really have the ability to pull out from the speed trap data which are specifically cars and which are specifically trucks. So then we finally decided we had to move to the least desirable approach, which was to do things by proxy. As Crystal was alluding to earlier, a lot of the time in the freight world, we end, as you all know, we use whatever the available data is, not necessarily the best data that we would like to use. In this case, we would have preferred to use the GPS data, but we had to make one more simplification. So for this last version, we used 5-minute speed trap data and didn't bother trying to distinguish cars from trucks. Instead, we compared two different lanes on freeways. So the innermost non-HOV lane is a proxy for the car speeds, assuming that not too many trucks are making their way all the way to the left. And then the second to outermost lane for the trucks, we didn't want to leave them all the way in the right-hand lane because there's so many merging issues. We thought that would bring the trucks to an artificially lower speed than would otherwise be the case, so we used the second to outermost lane to get a gauge for what truck performance would be. And what we see here by using this method is slightly smaller differences overall between the peaks, a 10% difference between cars and trucks on the roadways, and ultimately this is what we ended up implementing. So looking over time, now things are somewhat more reasonable. For the most part, 2006 performs worse than 2000. Trucks are moving slower than cars, and we feel relatively confident that this 10% difference is a reasonable estimate. And then across the methods, just a quick comparison between the two, in and out versus the short and long vehicles. So even this most simplistic method leads good results. We would have liked to have seen been able to use better data. The GPS data still validated some of these methods, so still useful for at least the context of validation, so to improve just the use of this simple method. But in the future, it'd be great to have more GPS data and comparable truck or car data, rather, so that we can actually have a complete picture of spot speeds and be able to compare directly on highway segments. Okay, so then our second project that we've been working on does use the data set that Dale described. As he alluded to, there are 2,500 trucks a day on the system with 15-minute reads. Obviously much richer information if you can get smaller reads, but the amount of data that you get, even at 15-minute reads, is so incredibly large that for the purposes of what we're doing here, it's not necessary to get to a finer level of detail than 15 minutes. So we're talking about something of the magnitude of more than 3 million records a month, which now have data dating back to early 2008. And as Dale was saying, the data will continue to be collected at least through the summer of 2011. And then take all these data and figure out how to actually put them onto the road network. And Dale showed some images of what that looks like through the University of Washington work. Have to figure out where trucks start and stop, and want to know the intentional stops. So anytime there was a stop of less than 3 minutes, that doesn't get considered as an actual stop. It could be due to traffic, but also want to validate through the GIS analysis that these are legitimate stops, and this is a point of interest such that, you know, if someone, say, is using a not very well utilized side street as truck parking overnight, that doesn't become the origin. You actually want to start with the place where they're picking up goods and then delivering them somewhere else. So we had, just for this case study, we used a month of data, 3 million reads, which gave us 358,000 individual truck trips. And it gives us all these great summary statistics. So 60-mile average trip distance, 21-minute average travel time, and so on. You can pick out all these statistics. So the GPS data gives us, even with just 2,500 trucks, it gives us a nice understanding of performance on the roadways. And so for the grocery stores, we were able to take now over a 3-month period and really look at a lot of different tours and trips and get a better understanding of what they do. So overall, we see that there's about 10 trips per tour, and that some of those are to larger grocers. And of course, if you break this out, you might find that a really large grocery chain sends one truck from their distribution center to a store, and that's all that truck does, versus some of the smaller vendors, say the beer distributors or other beverage distributors, that make many small trips within a tour to restaurants, grocery stores, and so on. So since this is a subset of all trucks, we wanted to develop an understanding of how many trucks would really come to the grocery stores. We had a very comparable rate to the information that we got out of interviews with stores, a different research project that Ed McCormick was involved in, that said more or less in the Puget Sound, 10 to 12 truck trips happen daily to each grocery store. And this turned out to be about half of all the observations from manual counts, trusting our manual counters a little bit more than the interviews. In this instance, we're able to factor the truck trips up by two to say that we're really, the GPS data represents about half of the vehicles that travel to grocery stores. And again, this could be done for any industry. It doesn't have to just rely on grocery distribution. Then we can further separate this out by trips to different types of areas. So our largest metropolitan cities all the way down to rural areas, and look at the number of daily truck trips. And this allows us to do something that potentially we weren't able to do before. Traditionally, when you consider trip generation for trucks, you think about employment and assume that each employee generates so many truck trips and factor that up. And what we're seeing here is that even under a very refined industry, grocery stores, in fact, employment has no correlation to the number of truck trips. It has more to do with the land use area that they're in. So this is allowing us to start thinking more strategically about how to apply trip generation rates. So lots of things can be done with the data. We can certainly continue the work with trip generation for any employment type, for any time of day, and so on. And there's lots of other useful metrics that come out of this: the spot speeds, travel times, reliability issues, trip and tour lengths for activity-based modeling purposes. Certainly calibration would be helped by such data, as opposed to just calibrating to observed truck counts, wherever you can find data for that. Again, the trip generation models. And one thing we're quite excited about right now is trying to develop commodity flow estimates with GPS data. Quite a long way to go in really developing a model that allows us to do that. But we're starting to think about being able to do that, because on a sub-regional level, thinking of corridor specific, we don't really have a good data source, and certainly the national sources, as good or not as they might be, don't give us that offer of detail. So instead of trying to develop a model that parses out the national data set to a corridor or facility-specific data, we're trying to develop a model that will do some estimation of commodity flows based on the GPS data set. And we're not only are we excited about this, but this whole effort is gaining excitement from other folks around the country. So the GPS data, the vendors themselves, as Dale pointed out, were using this as a byproduct. This was a waste stream, essentially, for them. So the quality is getting better as they're understanding that there could be a purpose for this data, and there's more of it, and it's available everywhere around the country, so others could easily implement this in similar ways and continue to do research on other uses for the data. I have my contact information up here. If you have any questions beyond today, happy to chat with anyone anytime about what we're doing with the data and how you might apply it yourself. Thank you.